If you don't follow football, you might not know that this week has been particularly busy in the NFL. Teams are making cuts, trades, signings, and moves in an effort to lay the groundwork for their 2024 season, kicking off in earnest the first week of September. But as of this recording, just about 48 hours ago, the Chicago Bears made headlines that won't have a grand effect on next season, or even the 8 seasons or so after that, but they're headlines nonetheless.
The Chicago Bears appear to be planning ahead to building a new stadium along the lakefront in Chicago, not in Arlington Heights, where the team bought property just over a year ago.
The Bears plan to contribute $2 billion in private funding for a domed stadium south of Soldier Field. Multiple reports cite a statement from President and CEO Kevin Warren is saying plans for that location will improve open spaces for all to enjoy. Those plans are expected to include tearing down most of the current stadium, except for historic aspects. A new poll found 4 out of 5 Chicago voters support a new stadium on the museum campus to keep the team in the city, but only 3 in 5 are okay with using public money to help pay for it.
In 2033, the team's lease runs out at Soldier Field, and since last year, when the organization purchased the defunct Arlington Park racetrack, a lot of assumption had been that the Bears were moving out of the city proper to the suburbs. But this news on Monday was, in football terms, inaudible.
I think what you're looking for is you're looking for a stadium that can be a host to the biggest events in the world. And it's almost now not so much do you have it, but if you're a major city, why don't you have it?
So what is a new home for the Chicago Bears likely to cost?
I've got to think in every fiber of my being that this building is going to have to go north of $5 billion.
And if you live in Chicago, maybe a bigger question is, what is it likely to cost you?
I think there's going to be a great deal of pressure on the Bears, on the Halases and the McCaskey family to imagine this grandly and not revert to their own kind of natural propensity not to want to spend.
I'm Jim Hankey, and this week, let's line up what we know about the future home of the Monsters of the Midway with the help of an authority on the business of sports stadiums. Let's get looped in, Chicago. Despite the Bears' ability to offer up $2 billion in funding out of their own wallets, a statement from Friends of the Park, an advocacy group credited or blamed with scuttling recent development along the protected city lakefront, called for the Bears to rethink their potential plan to build something south of Soldier Field along the lakefront. WBBM reporter Jim Goodis filed this report yesterday.
The Chicago Bears have reportedly committed to investing more than $2 billion as part of a project to build a dome stadium near the current site of Soldier Field. The project also reportedly would increase open space in the area. In an email to supporters, the interim executive director of Friends of the Parks, Jen Kilgore, questions the urgency of a lakefront stadium for the team. She says discussions about projects as impactful as a new stadium that will require significant public investment and profoundly affect the landscape of Chicago's lakefront should not be rushed. Kilgore has suggested building a new stadium on the former site of Michael Reese Hospital, which she says offers lakefront views as well as easy access for mass transit riders, drivers, and pedestrians without disrupting the lakefront. She claims her group is receiving angry emails about the possibility of forcing the Bears out of Chicago by opposing a lakefront stadium, but she says Friends of the Parks have also received thank yous from people who appreciate the group's ongoing efforts to preserve what she calls an open, clear, and free lakefront.
So with all this hubbub around Halas Hall, I wanted to speak with an expert on the business of sports stadiums and reached out to Robert Boland, an assistant professor of sports law at Seton Hall University Law School. His expertise in stadium financing is sought after, having been quoted or interviewed by various outlets like Sports Illustrated, USA Today, The New York Times, and The Wall Street Journal. I began our conversation asking for his examples of good stadium deals within the last, say, 5 or 10 years, to give Chicago Bears fans a sense of, even if they are on the hook for a new stadium, what that might ideally look like.
I think when we look at really successful stadium development projects, they all have unlocked a piece of typically downtown infrastructure. So I think the one we look at most is probably Indianapolis, which has become a great sports city and sports host because of the convention center dome aspect of it and proximity to everything to the state capital. So that's one of the ones that probably, if you point to the greatest success story of a stadium development paying off and paying off multiple times because it paid off with the prior building and now the current one, Lucas Oil. Indianapolis is always sort of the gold standard. The stadium everybody wants to recreate is SoFi. I think there is tremendous pressure on a first-ranked city like Chicago to build that kind of super stadium today. I think that's going to be one of the things that we're going to look at. And as we think about the Bears situation, we're hopeful that the pivot back down to the museum district is going to be really, really helpful in creating both a state-of-the-art mega stadium, which befits a great, great world-class city that will host world-class events, and the building of that stadium when we get there. That will be a big piece of it. Minneapolis has done a great job, and that was Kevin Warren's baby, the Bears president. That stadium unlocking part of downtown, opening the malls or the arcades up that everybody travels through in the snow of Minneapolis, but connecting those two has been a big success story. I think another one is in Atlanta, that Atlanta has secured its position as a world-class host, has a world-class airport, has hosted the Olympics. And I think having Mercedes-Benz in Atlanta has also allowed them to do that. I think what you're looking for is a stadium that can be a host to the biggest events in the world. And it's almost now not so much, do you have it? But if you're a major city, why don't you have it?
And you bring up Minnesota, which I think is really apt here. You know, Chicago sports fans, I think, are especially curious about this because of, like you said, Kevin Warren's resume. How was that Minneapolis stadium deal done? What has worked for the Vikings to be able to pay off that stadium more than two decades early, no less? And could something similar work here?
I think the success of it had a lot to do with the location, connecting it to the downtown arcades, connecting it to the baseball stadium from one end of the city to another, and locating it and right-siting it really was probably the winner. I think the fact that it was paid off early had a lot to do with the interest rates that it was built under, which you're not going to be able to replicate today. But I think you can create or recreate the number of super events that Chicago is able to host. I think he can maybe even more than replicate, exceed what Minnesota has been able to do. And I think the one challenge maybe culturally is the Halas family, the McCaskey-Halas family has been in the business of football and may not have that specific knowledge for stadium building and operation that the Wilf family in Minneapolis has had, who are basically real estate developers. So that may be the one kind of wild card in this. I think the other thing that you're going to have to look at in Chicago, the city of the broad shoulders is also the city of great architecture, and you can't have a second-rate design. You're going to have a first-rate design, and there's going to be pressure from the NFL in getting there. So I do think that's a really important aspect of this, that you're going to have to do an iconic stadium. The other NFL owners are going to want it, and there will be challenges now with interest rates sitting, you know, at the 5% and 6% and 7% level to finish a multi-billion dollar project. But it's certainly the chance to do an iconic stadium in downtown or in an area that connects both parts of Chicago or all parts of Chicago, and adds to an already touristed area, is a lot greater than it was at Arlington and Heights as a standalone stadium.
There's potential for a major market like Chicago to host the Olympics. Maybe if they get a dome stadium, the Super Bowl. To mention Minnesota again, they just hosted it in 2018. And teams tend to tout tourism dollars when making their arguments for why they need a new stadium, or at the very least, why they need stadium improvements. Aside from a worldwide event like the Super Bowl or the Olympics, what other things bring in money for a stadium other than the games during the season, the occasional concert?
The big ticket items, political conventions, maybe that aren't quite as big a ticket item as they used to be, but Chicago's hosted more of them for both parties than any other city. So I think political conventions would logically be something you think about. I also think that you're going to think about Final Fours, Big Ten conference championships, national collegiate championships, you can begin to think about larger events that now would be facilitated and possible because of the existence of the stadium. And I'm not somebody who totally believes in the idea if you build it, they will come. But there are events that would naturally be fitted very well in Chicago if that facility exists. And the NFL, which wants to create greater revenue and greater franchise value, wants to have super stadiums in the biggest of cities. They can be okay with smaller market teams having more modest stadia, but to have a super stadium in Chicago or Washington, probably ultimately in New York, to match the one in Los Angeles, to match the very, very high-end ones in Minnesota, Atlanta, Houston, Indianapolis, is really important to the value of the league. But I think the other thing we're going to begin to see is we're seeing more flexible technologies too in the stadium. So the idea that you could subdivide it. I was just in Indianapolis visiting with the head of Lucas Oil, who's a former student of the program at Ohio, and they're hosting the Olympic swimming trials. They're putting 250-meter pools in each half of the pool, one for practice, one for meets, and they're expecting 35,000 people through the gates in what would be a downtime for an indoor stadium. So I think in Chicago, given the importance of O'Hare, given how centrally located it is, period, but centrally located in the footprint of the Big Ten and our sports leagues, Chicago figures to be a really, really important player. And I could easily see Notre Dame bringing a home game or a game there regularly. I could see the Wisconsins or the Illinois playing there more regularly. And with the East-West push now, I could see the UCLAs and USCs coming there and playing games simply to attract the audience. The money, the corporate entities, it's much more important now. So, yeah, I kind of think that the uses aren't unlimited at a 60,000 or 70,000 seat stadium, but there are a lot of uses for them, and you'll get more dates than you'd probably think about.
Well, if we kind of look towards the future, I wonder what, to you, the cost of a dome stadium realistically looks like in 2033 and beyond. Like, I live in suburban Chicago now, but I'm from Milwaukee originally, and so we had Miller Park and now American Family Field up there. But Miller Park all of a sudden needed renovations, 20 years in. It doesn't seem like we are attending sporting events at the monoliths that were sort of unchangeable that our fathers and grandfathers went to, right? It's 2024 now. What do we have to look ahead to for this to be a top-of-the-line stadium 9 years from now when it opens, and then ensuring that hopefully in 20 more years, in 2053, it doesn't need some other type of overhaul?
I think lifespan is a critical aspect of any stadium. And in answer to your question, if you build it well enough and successfully enough without a ton of compromise, it probably holds up better. We're seeing a lot shorter lifespan in stadia, 20 to 30 years typically, which is about the financing range on them. So when you think about it, that's a particularly complicated one. So I don't know if we're going to see a Wrigley Field again that will last a century, but I do think you have the opportunity to if you imagine it at a large enough scale, you're going to be able to imagine a 50-year life cycle in the stadium. And that's really what you're going to look for, subject to probably one renovation inside of that. It doesn't have to be massive, but it does probably need to happen just to match our own consuming patterns. I have this debate with my wife fairly regularly. Why do you buy a new car? Well, you buy a new car not because it's devalued when it goes off a lot, which it most assuredly is, but you buy a new car because you hope it works for 3 years. That's the reason. You don't have to fund the repairs like you do on the car you already own. So that's kind of the argument there. It might be too simplistic, but again, I think there's going to be a great deal of pressure on the Bears, on the Halases, and the McCaskey family to imagine this grandly and not revert to their natural propensity not to want to spend.
Naming rights obviously are a big deal. I know I'm thinking way ahead here, but I think the rights for US Bank Stadium in Minneapolis were well over $200 million. What do naming rights look like if the Bears put up all the money, some of the money? How early can that purchase start contributing, if anything, to construction to maintenance?
I think if you think about the revenue streams, and this is it, the three biggest are suites, club seats, and naming rights. And I think now, if you think about the technology of modern stadiums, either with the ability to project LED or to project onto the skin of the stadium itself, naming rights are a little less valued than they once were when they peaked, because you could only put the name on it once and it was fixed. I think you have a lot of opportunities to create a lot of activity in the naming rights, in the stadium quadrants, in the presenting sponsor categories. So I would think you would think about a guaranteed income of a 20-year naming rights deal in the $20 to $40 million range. If you build a fancy enough and amazing enough facility, you might be able to top those numbers. And again, I think there's a lot of rational basis in doing that. What you're really also looking for is somebody who makes your naming rights deal work in the long term. The idea that you don't want to take the name off the stadium repeatedly. You want to keep that and have some consistency in it. So ideally, if you can find a local connection, something that speaks to Chicago, you're going to even be more powerful in that. So yeah, I think naming rights are going to be powerful. Now, for when? We've had a bunch of different strategies. Typically, you use your presenting sponsors to drive up your naming rights sponsor to kind of pre-qualify and bring them in. But your naming rights sponsor could come on at the beginning, or it could come on at the end. A lot of times we're seeing the naming rights sponsor at the end. If you look at Dallas, the building opened without a naming rights presenting sponsor. On the flip side of that, in Los Angeles, SoFi came in around mid-construction, I would say, if I recall. And so it's a question of really who are you talking to and how are you selling it? But ideally, you're going to be able to sell almost every inch of the stadium in some version of presented sponsor space. So your pouring rights deal, your gaming deal, which I will think will be a part of this, your opportunity for other hospitality, all are going to be fought over, all are going to be competed for, and you're going to probably leverage your naming rights deal on top of that.
Well, there's certainly, I want to get to something that's a little bit romantic about sports in a second, but there's also romance to these stadiums being named after 50, 100-year-old established companies. And like you said, you don't want to change these things year after year. But there's something I can't quite connect to when I hear about like the crypto.com arena, yeah, or even Guaranteed Rate Field here. These things that like haven't truly been established are kind of web-based, where you have crypto, where that's not part of everyday life yet.
The driver of buying naming rights either is an incredible affinity for the team and the location, or the fact that you're using it entirely as a promotional opportunity for a new product. So if you think about it, it's a little like getting a Super Bowl ad. It's something we got to sell a lot of, and we're going to sell it here locally, or it's something we want everyone to know our name because no one knows our name. And I do think that there's an important piece for a stadium that's going to have a long lifespan that's going to be enormously expensive. I've got to think in every fiber of my being that this building is going to have to go north of $5 billion. It will be probably in the $5 or $6 billion range. And that's really kind of unheard of space when we get there. It will be more expensive because of the location. It will be more expensive, obviously, because of the union work on it that will have to happen in Chicago. And we are doing it with high interest rates. So I do think that you really are going to work very hard to find an established name that really kind of fits the Bears and fits the stadium. I've written a lot about this. I've been sort of anti-naming rights in my history as a professor. I joked once that every stadium will be named after a bank or a phone company. But if you think about it, the idea is if you change names often, we always go back to calling it by another name or calling it by its prior name. And there is some value in the presented by. That you don't have to worry. So the idea of maybe if you named it after someone amazing, not that people are doing this a lot, but if you named it after somebody whose values are unassailable, that would be an easy piece of it. So we typically now would put a statue of Gale Sayers, a statue of Walter Payton, and a statue of Dick Butkus outside this stadium, and don't name it Sayers Butkus Payton Stadium. But I kind of think, as a Mets fan, the Jackie Robinson Stadium presented by a bank or a card company would look just as good as Citi Field. So again, we're always looking for creative ways of doing it.
you know, in today's day and age, it seems logistically smart to just go ahead and make a stadium for any weather, any type of event, from sports to concerts and beyond. But there is that romance that's gone from Bears football specifically. If the elements of sleet and cold and such are blocked out by a roof, I can't picture Lambeau Field ever going that route. But it's also sort of like an apples and oranges situation scenario. Like, Green Bay is never going to host a Super Bowl. They're not really attempting to bring A-list concert talent through a population that's 4% the size of Chicago. But I just wonder, as a purist, is a little bit of that romance gone if every time it dips below 50 degrees, they can throw the roof on and you got Chicago Bears football? And it's just not what, again, I hate to reference like our dads and our grandparents, but it's not the same.
Yeah, there's a definitive change in that. But I mean, if you think about just the black and blue division that we think about in the NFC, two of them already play indoors and have for a long time. The Bears would be the change in that, but they played on artificial turf for a long time. So I think we can live with that in the process. I think the compelling economics for the league as a whole, and for in maybe some respects, and I don't want to suggest that I have any insight into this, but as teams become more valuable, the minority shares of them also become leverageable to private equity or other entities. And for the Halas family, that may be a perfect scenario for them to both continue to control the team and not have a lot of other independent sources of wealth. Having the most vibrant, successful stadium becomes a really important piece of that.
To you, is this like a perfect storm in Chicago where you have the Bears potentially seeking public money aside from the $2 billion they're expected to contribute? The White Sox potentially seeking public money. That's a whole other story where they may end up. The Chicago Red Stars, the women's soccer team, has made it clear that they're seeking public money. And there's obviously a very limited amount that the city can work with. We have a mayor who's not too far into his tenure. There's not a lot he can dole out or promise amongst three teams, and we could even see more from there. So there's just a lot of players vying for a small piece of pie currently.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt that our resources for sports are taxed pretty heavily by the number of people demanding them. Mayors, unfortunately, because they serve fixed terms and don't have life appointments, probably only do one stadium deal and never want to lose a team and want to try to keep everybody happy, which makes them in some ways easy targets. But also, if they're smart and have the ability to plan effectively, you might be able to create a design that allows you to do all three things effectively and provide opportunity for both high schools and for other colleges in the area to kind of use some of those facilities. So we don't have a design yet. So I can't really assess the architectural design as yet. But if we were thinking about an MLS team, a women's soccer league team, the White Sox, and the Bears, in part of a master plan facility, you might be able to find synergy and value in that. Not all having them play in the same facility, but having them play in the same environs, which would be valuable. And you may have the ability to have more local sports, more college sports, more high school sports play there. So I could see a vibrant high school football scene playing in the women's soccer stadium, for example. And then a championship game going off in the new Bears stadium. So there are ways to synergize this. And one of the things that we're beginning to see some regional control of this. So the idea that we're not all alone and we're not all competing against each other might really be helpful.
Well, finally, I want to quote the article from ESPN this week talking about the Bears stadium. They say a recent independent poll conducted by McGuire Research surveyed 500 registered voters living in the city of Chicago on several topics related to the construction of a new Bears stadium. According to these results, 80% of those polled supported a domed stadium that would host major events throughout the year on the museum campus, while 77% supported the proposed location due to the efforts to keep the Bears in the city of Chicago. The results concluded that more than 6 in 10 Chicagoans support using public money for a publicly owned stadium.
Don't blow that momentum.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That's a landslide.
Well, that's kind of leads to the thing I wanted to discuss with you, which is, you know, where do you see this going and when? Because we have until 2033 when the lease on Soldier Field runs out. Kevin Warren has said from when the shovels hit the dirt to the opening of a stadium, it'll be 3 years, built and open in 3 years. But logistically, how quickly do things need to happen? Do you see financing coming down to a public vote? I'd just be curious on how you feel this plays out.
I think you're thinking 5 years shovel to opening. That's a pretty aggressive schedule. There have been some designs floated, so the Bears probably have a bit of an advantage. The league has a bit of an advantage setting that up already, so there probably are some ideas. If we're thinking about sort of a joint master plan, that's probably going to take a little bit of planning and how we're going to do it. There may be some fights along the way. The financing is complicated, clearly on a project so large. There's probably a fair amount of federal money flowing into the Chicago area from the Inflation Reduction Act, and this infrastructure could be paired with it, if not exactly it. I think 3 years is really fast, and if Kevin Warren can do that, God knows what he can do. But my thought would be this is a plan that's probably 5 years, probably matches the expiration of the overall lease on Soldier Field, and I think probably fits the timing for a revitalization of Chicago in this crossroads neighborhood.
Well, Robert, it's been a busy week on this issue, and I'm sure it's only going to get busier. Thanks again for spending some of your day discussing this with me and to give our listeners some of your insight. I appreciate it.
Hi, Jim. Thank you so much.
This episode of Looped in Chicago was hosted, produced, and edited by me, Jim Hankey. Thanks to Mai Martinez and Jim Goodis for use of their on-air audio. WBBM's news director is Craig Schwalb, and Myron Kaplan is our managing producer of national news podcasts. You can follow us on TikTok at WBBM News Radio 105.9, as well as on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at WBBM News Radio for visuals related to all of our episodes. Thanks for listening, and we'll keep you looped in again right here next week. See you then.